wonderful being back here. And I hope this congregation appreciates what a wonderful chauffeur they have in Ralph Greer, who found his way to the Lougheed SkyTrain station in the fog. It's been nearly 10 years only since I first saw firsthand a large assembly of Unitarians. I was in Indianapolis, Indiana, attending a scholar seminar in religious history in the United States, and as luck would have it, the annual meeting of the Unitarian Universalist Association was holding its annual general assembly in the convention center adjacent to the hotel where our academic meetings were taking place. Thousands of Unitarians, young and old, flocked the hotel, the nearby streets and cafes. Now, as a student of religion, I knew something about Unitarianism, its history and the development of its religious thought. Indeed, my first undergraduate research paper was a study of Michael Servetus, the 16th century pioneer of Unitarianism. But I knew very little about it as a living, contemporary phenomenon. Fortunately, we decided to do a little field work in U.S. religions by calling off a seminar session to take a look at what was going on next door. What greeted us was quite a shock. In a huge hangar-like room was a bewilderingly diverse city of boutiques, bookstores, and special interest information booths, a veritable Unitarian bazaar. For the first time, I saw Christian, Buddhist, pagan, Jewish, and humanist Unitarians. There were Unitarians promoting social justice, ethical investment, crystal and aromatherapy, environmental activism, vegan products, gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered identity, and Unitarian history. I saw Unitarians in three-piece suits, in drag, Unitarians tie-dyed, pierced, and tattooed, women, men, and children, alone and in families and groups, milling and rambling about, talking, hawking, schmoozing, and connecting. I was delighted and deeply moved. My colleagues, on the other hand, people who I knew normally as objective and rational students of religion and culture, treated it as though it was a big joke. And they were, to my amazement, unashamed about talking smack about Unitarians and this extraordinary celebration of diversity under one roof, unabashed about deriding Unitarians and their political correctness. Oh, how I've come to loathe that term. Loathe that, and also the way they were deriding Unitarian trendiness and their eclectic grab bag theology. From them, for the first time, I heard jokes like, "What do you get when you cross a Jehovah Witness and a Unitarian? Someone who knocks at your door and has nothing to say." Now, I hope we're laughing at the Unitarian part of it. I didn't think it was funny, and I told them so. Here they were, scholars of religion, supposedly. Not funny because Jehovah Witnesses were remarkably faithful and courageous in the face of merciless persecution by the Nazis. Not funny because not only did I find the diverse expressions of being a contemporary Unitarian engaging, enlightening, and profound, but because I also knew that Unitarians historically have had something to say. And it was precisely that something that whipped up dogma-drugged and demented religious demagogues like John Calvin and the Roman Catholic Inquisition to hunt them down, to convict, imprison, censor, oppress, exile, and execute Unitarian women and men. in the offhanded derision of my otherwise oh-so-well-educated colleagues, I scented a latent whiff of the persecution that hounded Unitarians and Jehovah Witnesses into exile and death, and I didn't find it amusing. We sit secure most of the time in our homes and livelihoods, in our religious and political freedoms. Secure in no small measure because of certain critical events in the 1700s and 1800s that broke the back of religious and political persecution in the Western world. A state of affairs so foul, so rank, that revolutionary religious, scientific, and political leaders rose up, challenged and overturned orthodoxies of belief and politics with ideas and institutions that achieved the very hallmarks of historical Unitarian teaching and practice, the hallmarks of complete freedom of religious thought and expression, the unrestricted use of reason in science and faith, and tolerance and acceptance of differing religious and spiritual views and practices. In each of these revolutionary propositions, Unitarians played significant roles both in defining and achieving them. Now, to be sure, we can hardly take full credit for the world in which we live, but we need to take stock of the influence Unitarians have had in domains of securing human, civic, and sexual rights, religious freedom, advocacy for mental health, promotion of evolutionary biology and cosmology, the historical critical study of scripture, and the comparative study of world religions. Significant contributions in all these domains. There is a profound story here of a vanguard religious and ethical community that has played a key role in creating the world in which we live and cherish, and which needs our resolute advocacy. For the first time 10 years ago, I saw its zany and thoughtful, its diverse and unified offspring. Unified. Unified around what? Let's return to that question in a minute, but I have two more stories. A couple of months before that Indianapolis Convention Center experience, my two oldest boys, then teenagers, were invited by some of their Unitarian friends to attend a Unitarian youth group. On successive Sundays, my sons came home to tell me what they heard and discussed in this youth group. Presentations by health professionals about issues like date rape and responsible sexuality, about the warning signs of depression and suicide, and how to effectively respond to them. And all of this in a thoughtful, mature, ethical framework, one where young people were treated like rational and responsible human beings. Now, as a parent and a student of religion, and as someone who was exiting out of the religion of his birth, let me tell you what my sons came home and told me those days impressed me deeply. What my kids had to say inspired me to give Unitarianism a chance, and so I started attending meetings at the First Unitarian Church in Salt Lake City. Now, that was only 10 years ago. And look where it got me. Last story. A couple of months ago, I celebrated the wedding of my eldest son, both as father of the groom and as officiant at the wedding. Now, some months before, I sat down with Dietrich and Wynne to talk about their plans. And as I do with every couple with whom I meet, I told them something like, "Look, I'm here to help you celebrate the kind of wedding you want. What would you like to have happen? What words do you want to be said? Let's work together to create the kind of wedding you want, that you'll enjoy, and whose memory you will always cherish. I say words like this now to couples because they are congruent with what is primary to the religious and ethical tradition that we call Unitarianism, a tradition that sees the paramount responsibility of religion as advocacy for the inherent worth and dignity of the human person, not the worth and dignity of dogma, ritual, and institutions. A living, risk-taking tradition that calls on each of us into thoughtful and passionate living within the mystery, wonder, and depth of nature. A call to look deeply into who we are, what we value, what we dream to achieve. And it acknowledges the authority within each of us to explore and create our own theology and ritual life within the framework of what we affirm as being of ultimate worth. I've come to see that in something as human and ordinary as a wedding interview, an extraordinary worldview is revealed in words like, "What words do you want to be said at your wedding? What kind of wedding do you want?" I found myself wishing that 30 years ago someone had asked me and Diana that question. Now, in these stories, I've been trying to disclose what I believe holds us together as a distinct historical and international religious and ethical community. Because I've come to appreciate how Unitarianism has contributed in crucial ways to holding my family together, to holding me together through the past tumultuous decade in our lives. Think about it. Diversity under one roof as a sign of strength, not of weakness, as a reason to celebrate, not to mourn. A history of a vanguard group of individuals and communities resolute in their advocacy of religious freedom and human rights, of critical reason and deep reverence before each other and nature. Of adults who can genuinely respect the integrity of young people in their midst and who take seriously the call to responsible education and mentorship. A worldwide congregation of children, youth, and adults who see themselves empowered to build their own theology, their own communities, and their ethical and religious lives by virtue of an awesome, humbling authority, both innate and acquired, rational and spiritual, historically informed and dazzlingly inspired by the abiding, beckoning depths, the mystery of human beings connected in, through, and dependent upon the ever-evolving web of all that exists. Now, I decided about 10 years ago that if I still wanted to be a publicly religious being, this was a tradition, a story, a community, and an ecstatic openness toward the world, and a process of critical belief formation and practice that I could claim, and by which I could be inspired and claimed in turn. For me, there was no other viable alternative. I knew just enough about the history, beliefs, and institutions of other faith communities to know that I could not cast my lot and pitch my tent with them. Now, Unitarianism has held me and my attention and commitment these past 10 years for the following reasons that I've touched upon already. First of all, the first reason is diversity and autonomy. The Unitarian recognition and celebration of diversity enabled me to more fully appreciate the diversity of ideas, beliefs, and trajectories within my own home, and to be more fully honor the autonomy of my partner and of our children without falling apart. Okay? To be sure, diversity and autonomy can act as a centrifugal force propelling the contents of a body away from the center. But it can as well act as a centripetal, attractive force by virtue of the respect and loyalty it can generate and the dialogue it can create between individuals. A dialogue that beckons each to approach, to come closer in order for a conversation between equals to take place, in order for each voice to be heard, counted, and valued. I'm going to take a drink of water with that one. What Unitarianism enabled me to do was not to fall apart as my own children were coming of age, with their own ideas, their own life projects, their own takes on things that didn't necessarily accord, you know, with my own. But instead of falling apart, I was granted permission to ease up, to let go, right, and to learn from them. And what a great gift that was. And so instead of our family falling apart at a really crucial moment in our lives, exiting out of the religion of my youth into Unitarianism was a way for me to keep my family together, as different as we are. So diversity and autonomy, that's the first thing that really has held me and my attention and commitment. The second is history. In Unitarian history, I discovered a cast of characters for the first time that I could happily claim as kin, whose advocacy for rights and freedoms and progressive beliefs more fully coincide with the trajectories of my own search. For the first time in my adult life, I encountered a serviceable, non-alienating past and an inspiring heritage, a narrative in which to take up residence and to which I could willingly contribute. And as a newcomer, I was made to feel welcome and valued in that story, a story to which I could willingly and in such wonderful welcome add my own. The third is democracy and mentorship. Historically, Unitarians have been deeply committed to the principle and practice of local self-government and of the democratic process within their congregations. Now, as you know, that commitment doesn't come cheap. It entails that each of us shares responsibility in congregational ministry, that each contributes generously of their time, talents, and means, that each of us willingly and wittingly participates in the common task of mentoring each other, and especially our youth, by word and example. The historic fact, an abiding aspiration of Unitarian democracy, responsibility, and mentorship resonated with my own passion for good, inspiring, participatory government and for our sacred duty to acquire and then generously share the fruits of our knowledge and experience with others. For if there's anything that congregational polity tells us, all right, congregational polity, that is self-government, okay, self-financing, self-actualizing, self-defining, is that there's no one out there to save us. Okay? We're on our own, and we will thrive and flourish or falter, depending on the degree to which we are willing to put our hand to the plow and to stay the course. The fourth item that has grabbed me and kept me here is a questing, open-ended theology. We share a questing, open-ended theological and ethical life. And let me explain as best I can. Nearly 500 years ago, Francis David, the leader of Transylvania's Unitarian community, said the following: "In this world, there have always been many opinions about faith and salvation. We need not think alike to love alike. There must be knowledge in faith also. Sanctified reason is the lantern of faith, and conscience will not be quieted by anything less than truth and justice." What David's faith, knowledge, and conscience led him to say, though it cost him his life, was this: God is indivisible. God is one. Now, in these statements, many opinions about faith and salvation, you need not think alike to love alike, there must be knowledge in faith, conscience will not be quieted with anything less than truth and justice, and the indivisibility and unity of the divine. In these revolutionary compact statements, using the vocabulary of the time available to him, David helped to sketch out and affirm our questing, open-ended Unitarian beliefs. Beliefs that say our ideas and language about things like faith and salvation are conjectures. They're opinions, they're not facts. A belief that proposes that love and compassion can enable differences of opinion about grave matters of faith to be expressed without fear of recrimination and persecution. A belief that acknowledges that reason is necessary and beautiful. A lamp that helps light the path of the mind, heart, and soul. A belief that asserts crucially that each of us has a conscience, though it may be a mystery, it is ours. It can be a source of spiritual joy and happiness and an unquiet, irrepressible life companion that demands truth and justice from us and from our world. And then finally, David said, God is indivisible. God is one. We're not talking here about a small God, a God who is merely a projection of us out onto the cosmos, us and our quaint and dangerous time and culturally bound notions of what is mighty or big or good. It's not about which gender to privilege, or tribe to exalt, or religious institution to revere, or doctrine to enshrine. There's something richer and more profound going on here. For more than two decades, I have been trying to scrape the barnacles of inherited belief off the vessel of my mind and the hold of my heart. It's hard work. Barnacles are tenacious. But what David proposed in the 1570s, and what Unitarians have been exploring and affirming ever since, is both a way of doing theology and the lifting up of an idea or picture of what theology tries to get at that are worth taking seriously. Unitarian theology is a dry dock for scraping off unwanted, outdated, and perhaps dangerous belief barnacles that clutter our heads and our hearts. A Unitarian approach to theology can unite us and provide powerful tools for barnacle removal. It acknowledges the fact and importance of beliefs while insisting that they are subject to change as we illuminate them in the steady light of reason, dialogue, and science. Now, if a belief is provisional, not eternal and always binding, then while it may be passionately held, it may never be violently preached or coercively imposed. And that means that a Unitarian community of belief should be a community of patience, humor, and compassion. As well, beliefs worth our assent and devotion must be able to withstand the acid test of our conscience and its unquiet demand for truth and justice. And finally, there is what David named as indivisible and one. What he called God, what we may think about when we talk of the interdependent web of all existence, what I think of and revere as nature. Nature, both cosmic and subatomic, that unsurpassable mystery which bodies us forth, connects us and all that exists, matter, thought, and feeling, that which is, that from whence we came, and that which endlessly beckons us forward into new possibilities of being and responsibility that we call the adventure of our lives. Diversity and dignity under one roof. An amazing history for us to claim. Congregations that govern and mentor themselves through democracy and education. The authority of conscience within us, claiming us for truth and justice. And last, but not least, that holy, interconnected wonder that is nature. May we cherish what holds us together. It's quite extraordinary. And may we be good Unitarians, family.